Welcome to San Francisco City Insider, the San Francisco Chronicle podcast on the people and politics making headlines in the city by the bay. I'm Chronicle columnist Heather Knight, and I'm here today with Kristen Evans. She owns three businesses in the Haight and is the president of the Haight-Ashbury Merchants Association. We're talking about business troubles on the street with never-ending construction, the fate of the old McDonald's, and when the city will ever see the Prop C money she helped secure. Kristen Evans, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So you own three businesses in the Haight. Can you briefly walk me through what those are and how long they've been in operation?
Yeah, so the Booksmith has been in the Haight-Ashbury since 1976 and was founded by Gary and Debbie Frank, who still own the building. And I took over the Booksmith in 2007. It's over 40 years old now.
Wow.
And the other two businesses are newer to me. The Alembic, a very popular Haight-Ashbury craft cocktail bar that was founded by Dave McLean, is next door to the space that we took over a year prior, the bindery space in the old Red Victorian movie house. So between the three businesses, it's a lot of work, but a lot of fun.
In your copious free time, you're also the president of the Haight-Ashbury Merchants Association.
Correct.
And how many members does that have?
So the Haight-Ashbury Merchants Association represents about 150 storefronts along Haight Street, of which about 140 are occupied currently. Dues-paying members, we've had about 90 historically.
And the street has been undergoing, seems like, some kind of construction work or another pretty much for at least 5 years, probably longer.
Yes. So there was some initial emergency sewer work that started, I think, in 2014. Was supposed to be a short project, ended up lasting 2 years, resulting in the termination of the subcontractor. This was the first time that the city's actually fired a contractor, I think, in several decades.
Wow.
Yes.
And then what happened after that? Because there's still...
there were a lot of gas leaks and sinkholes associated with that work, and it was really disruptive to the businesses on that 1400 block of Haight Street. But what had also been planned was a public realm effort, and that was thought to be in anticipation of the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love. The work is actually happening.
That is come and gone.
After the anniversary. But it was a lengthy community process that actually was initiated with Ross Mercurimi, funded by Christina Loggi, restarted by London Breed, and continued under Valley Brown. And now we have Dean Preston. So it's been a lengthy process. And that construction work started about 2 years ago and is scheduled to end in June 2021.
Wow. So what has all this work done to businesses on the street in terms of foot traffic? And
yeah, unfortunately, foot traffic is down. But, you know, we tried to do our best to educate our members about what they could anticipate in terms of construction impacts. The Castro merchants had gone through a recent major public realm redo. And some of our business owners also had businesses located in that corridor. So they were able to share information about how disruptive the impacts on foot traffic and sales. So we were anticipating about a 30 to 40% potential impact to, you know, sales. And so businesses were asked to really see what they could do. You know, either negotiating with the landlord, because a lot of us are locked into long-term leases, for interim, you know, rent flexibility. And, you know, obviously most stores ended up cutting staff.
Wow. How's business at the Booksmith? We hear reports from of the imminent demise of independent booksellers all the time because of Amazon, but it doesn't seem like that's actually coming to pass.
Yeah, no, certainly when, you know, Amazon's been on the rise, but most of the independent bookstores have found ways to survive and thrive in the internet era, and Booksmith is not an exception to that. So we really emphasized the experience of coming into a store and discovering books that you didn't even know about. Amazon can be really great if you know, like, I want that particular title or I follow a particular author. But I think about 60% of purchases are in an independent bookstore unplanned.
Oh, wow. That's
so
cool.
It gives people an opportunity to come. And, you know, we have little shelf talkers on the shelves, and that leads to people picking up books that they didn't know about. Yeah.
What are your best shelf labels? I've seen the Green Apple Books ones. They're pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're all written by staff, members of our staff. We have 6 full-time and 10 part-time staff members. Uh-huh. And so everybody has different interests. And so we have somebody that is really into true crime. So we have a really interesting true crime section curated. Obviously, we had Manson was famously in the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
That's what the bestseller out of that section. But cool. Yeah.
How are your businesses managing to thrive while several others have been closing? I know Ashbury Music Center is closing. Ambiance is closing. I think there's about 10 vacancies right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't think it's a sales problem. Most of our businesses beyond the construction are actually seeing diversification of our revenue to internet sales. So no brick and mortar store is really simply brick and mortar anymore. About 10% of my business is online. I know the music stores is doing about 15% of business online. What has happened is while we've been able to continue to grow our sales and our top line, the rent is actually going up faster. Mm. So, and I would say couple that with also increased employee costs. So, you know, we've had a steep rise in the minimum wage and some additional benefits costs that have fell onto business owners. And that equation is not penciling out for a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm. Is there some point at which landlords have to just back off these rent increases? Because if they're forcing people to move out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so I was a big supporter for the minimum wage, but I knew that, you know, besides my cost of goods, I have 2 major costs, and that's rent and employee costs. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, outside of cutting my staff back and being really lean and mean and using technology to be super efficient in the way that I run my store, it really has to come from the rent.
Mm-hmm. The old McDonald's at Haight and Stanyan remains a major blight on the neighborhood, even though the city bought it and plans to build affordable housing eventually. It's still a parking lot. I was out there yesterday. There was one car parked there, mm-hmm. and it's covered in graffiti. It's just not very pleasant, even though the whole point was that it was a blight. And that's why they bought it.
Yeah.
What's your feeling on that?
Well, McDonald's was never, you know, the most popular business in the neighborhood anyway, right? And so I think people were really excited when the city acquired that lot and we were going to see some affordable housing built. Of course, everyone knew that it was going to take some time and there were some proposals to actually activate the lot. And that included a neighborhood coalition, which includes merchants, residents and homeless service providers to come up with a proposal for an interim use. Mm-hmm. There was a competing proposal that you've written about, a street soccer use. The mayor's office led us through an interim use process. And in the end, they elected to not proceed with either.
Right. Was that frustrating to you? Because it's just going to be a parking lot indefinitely.
Yeah. I mean, I think I had shared this with you before that we were frustrated that they also said, well, the merchants really want parking. So they kind of made it like.
Blamed it on you.
Blamed it on me. But, you know, we were really clear that, you know, while we liked having a portion of the lot used for parking, we actually had conceived of a joint community plan for a third. Mm-hmm. A third community space with an arts and music stage. A lot of the merchants were going to contribute programming, like we're going to have authors coming and speaking and talking on the stage, local musicians. And then we were going to have a third of it also for homeless services. The Haight has a unique challenge in that we have a homeless youth population that is different than the homeless populations around the city. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people really want to see, you know, longer term solutions to addressing the challenges of having visible homelessness in our neighborhood. And so, you know, there's a lot of support for having services to help navigate people to housing.
Mm-hmm. I know that you've helped city officials look for navigation center sites within District 5, and they keep saying, oh, we're looking, but there's still no proposal.
Well, so I went back into my email thread, and, you know, that's probably more frustrating than the McDonald's lot is.
Lots of reasons to be frustrated.
You know, 4 years ago, when the first navigation center opened in the Mission, then Supervisor Breed was at the podium. I was in the audience. Mary Howe, the executive director from Homeless Youth Alliance, was in the audience. And the reason why we were there is because she actually said, you know, this is a new model for shelters. Mm-hmm. And it's ideal for homeless youth like those that we have in the Haight. And the reason for it is because of the three Ps, right? Pets, partners, and packs. So you have groups of people that are living in the parks in the daytime and in the merchants' doorways in the Haight in the evenings. And they tend to be in groups of like 2 to 20. And, you know, they have dogs, they have their belongings with them. And so the idea of the Navigation Center being this welcoming place that would also potentially be not necessarily dry, sober space, but also a place where people could also partake of drugs and alcohol was what we saw as a real solution for navigating homeless youth who tend to get themselves, you know, off the street by the time that they're 30, about 90% of them do. But if they're connected with people earlier and harm reduction services, sobering services, job training services, and housing services, mm-hmm. then they're going to be off the street sooner.
Mm-hmm. So why has it taken so long to find a space?
That would be a question that I would love to get a straight answer. You know, the reality is that site has been the reason given. But the reality is there's a lot of sites in the Haight. I've visited them. I've walked them. I think they're totally suitable. My favorite, mentioned to you, is this Park and Rec parking lot. It's currently being used for Park and Rec vehicles. It's right between the police station and Alvord Lake, where a lot of homeless youth hang out. Mm-hmm. It's also right next to Keysar Pavilion, which has showers and toilets. They have this very large parking lot that mobile units could be established. So that was my favorite location. There's also, this, as you mentioned, the 730 Stanyan lot, Hamilton Church, and other locations mm-hmm. in the area.
So in your mind, there's no reason that there shouldn't be one.
Not really, no.
Yeah. I'm Heather Knight, and I'll be right back after this. I'm back with Kristen Evans. You made the news over a year ago for spearheading the passage of Prop C to raise taxes on the city's biggest businesses to pay for homeless services. Mm-hmm. And you were widely credited with getting Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff to join the Yes on C team along with
I tweeted at him.
How did you get him on board?
You know, so I misunderstood a tweet that somebody had put out there. They were live tweeting a Salesforce conversation he was having with Mayor Breed. And he had said something along the lines that homelessness was offering the four seasons of homeless services. And I said, this is why billionaires, you know, need to be taxed. They're so out of touch. They don't even understand. I mean, just the idea of equating
the sidewalk is the four seasons.
I can't even imagine equating a five-star luxury hotel with, you know, the people that I see surviving just like barely in my neighborhood.
Right.
It felt really wrong. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I basically said that very publicly. We ended up direct messaging each other, ended up talking for over an hour. And, you know, kind of business person to business person, we both saw that we have stakeholders, mm-hmm. Neighbors, customers. As businesses, we actually thrive when the community is thriving. Mm-hmm. And we had more in common than I realized.
Did he explain his four seasons comment?
Apparently, it was a quote from a research report put out about, it was a homeless person himself that had described what he felt the experience of coming to San Francisco was like. Huh. Now that's one person.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously not what I would describe as the typical experience, and probably was a selective quote used mm-hmm. in a report for a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Prop C did pass, but there's a dispute now because it passed with more than a majority, but not 2/3. And so it's tied
mm-hmm,
up
mm-hmm,
in court.
Yeah.
And what's the latest? When do you think we'll finally see that money?
So it's an excellent question. The city's been collecting the funds now since last year. By the time that the court case is settled, probably in a year or two, we could have almost $1 billion to spend on permanent solutions for housing our homeless. I know that Mayor Breed's been really focused on shelter, and she's the Chronicle just reported that she's likely to hit her 1,000 shelter bed target. Mm-hmm. But shelters are just temporary, and especially if we have this long wait list for people to get into a temporary 90-day shelter bed, then they're back on the street right after that. period of time. We need longer term solutions.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to see that money spent on?
Yeah. So Prop C allocates 50% to permanent housing. And I think that that is really key. But obviously, some people are not going to be able to stay in permanent housing if they have severe mental illness or addiction issues. So another part of Prop C funded mental and behavioral health. It also looked at homelessness prevention with rental subsidies. Mm-hmm. One of my neighbors, Eileen, is born and raised San Franciscan. She has low IQ and has been on Social Security disability her entire life. She's now 60, and her rent is now 90% of her Social Security disability check. She has to live on less than $130 a month for mm-hmm. all of her basic needs. That includes her food, her necessities for the bathroom, mm-hmm. for cleaning her clothes, mm-hmm. New clothes, and so she relies heavily on friends in a network.
Wow.
But she's an example of somebody. I mean, it's really very messed up to have mm-hmm. someone that is a born and raised San Franciscan living in such an impoverished circumstance.
Right.
That I think every time we have the conversation about what's fair, how much should Jack Dorsey and Twitter and Square pay? I just think of Eileen and I say, the businesses can pay a little more.
I think Jack Dorsey can do better.
I think so too.
Okay. Well, you've survived the serious questions.
Yes.
And now it's time for the lightning round.
Oh, cool.
What is your favorite place in San Francisco to get a burrito?
So there's a fun place on Haight Street, relatively new, called Street Taco, and they have a really yummy shrimp burrito.
Nice. Yeah. What is your favorite movie filmed in San Francisco?
Ooh. So I married a axe murderer.
Yes.
That's my favorite too. I haven't watched it in like a while, but
that's the correct answer.
Yep.
I think I know what you're going to say to this one, considering you own a bar. But what is your favorite place in San Francisco to get a stiff drink?
It is true. I mean, I was a patron of the Alembic before I became an owner.
Okay.
There's a particular drink that the founding bartender Daniel Hyatt made called the Southern Exposure, which is really yummy and lovely.
What's in it?
It's a gin based drink with cucumber. But we've had with a change in ownership, a new bar manager come in, and Kat makes a mean night market, which is also a gin based drink, but it has a lemongrass shrub, and it's really yummy. Even if you don't like alcohol, you can mix that with sparkling water, and it's really yummy.
Wow.
Yeah.
The international reputation of Haight-Ashbury, accurate or overblown?
Well, yes. All of it's true. I mean, that's what attracted me to the Haight-Ashbury. I grew up in the East Bay, and I married a man from India who had spent the last 20 years of his life working here in the Bay Area. And I was frequently going to India, and I love just the energy and the chaos and, the buzz of living in New Delhi. And Haight-Ashbury is pretty much the closest thing you can get to that.
Yeah, for better or for worse.
Exactly.
As a bookstore owner, do you read a lot at home, or are you sick of books in the evening and just want to turn on Netflix?
That's a good question. A lot of Netflix is book-based, mm-hmm. right? So you don't really get away from books by going on to Netflix, right? It's so interesting to see. If you want to know what's going to be playing on Netflix, like read the bestsellers now, No, but I do enjoy reading, and I also listen to audiobooks both. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's so many great books. Yeah.
What is your favorite book of all time?
Oh, I get that question a lot. I'm going to put Margaret Atwood on there right now, because I did go back and I reread it, Handmaid's Tale, when the TV series came out. Mm-hmm. I had read it as a teenager and had really responded to it. But, it's also just really responsive to the political moment. I mean, it's so foretelling. and it helps us grasp in an interesting way. Her sequel, The Testaments, follows three of the major characters from The Handmaid's Tale, including Aunt Lydia. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember Aunt Lydia's role, but she basically was the matron over the handmaids.
Yeah.
And she was sort of this evil in the first book.
Yeah.
The second book, we learn a lot about who she was. And she was a judge, and she, basically she came into a situation where male society was no longer going to allow women to have jobs or really even have power positions. So she found, she carved out like the one power position that she could find in that society.
Do you recommend The Testaments? I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, it's a good, it's a really good read. Yeah.
Is it as good as the first?
Yeah, and it's different, you know, because it's written 20 years later and it's trying to also respond to, you know, a lot of what Margaret Atwood has had in terms of dialogue with her readers over that period of time.
Yeah. Who is your favorite San Francisco author?
Okay. That is going to get me in trouble.
That's for, what I'm aiming
for,
to
for,
do.
For answering that. But I will say that I have read everything by Andrew Shungrier, mm-hmm. who is a Lower Haight resident. And he's got, a lot of people don't know his books, and that's why I want to mention him, is he did win the Pulitzer Prize for Less, which is semi-autobiographical and totally comic and dark and lovely about a middle-aged gay man who is traveling the world in literary circles. But he's also written a lot of historical fiction mm-hmm. that has magical realism in it. One of my favorite books is called A Story of a Marriage, and it's set in the Inner Sunset. And it's in a period of time right following World War II, a man marries an African-American woman, and the Inner Sunset's one of the only few places in San Francisco that they're allowed to live as a interracial couple. Hmm. So it's a really beautiful, quiet book, mm-hmm. and I love it.
Great. I'll put it on my list.
Sounds good.
Lastly, what is something you always make sure to squeeze into your busy day?
I adopted a dog a year and a half
Who's
ago,
here with
Joey Pistachio, and he's my constant companion. Yeah. And he's actually getting me out so much more. I think people say that when they get a dog, yeah, but it's so true. And I'm discovering all these wonderful dog-friendly beaches and parks. And, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So I try to carve something out every day for him.
And now he's seen a podcast studio.
Yes, he has. He's a really good sport. He comes with me to community meetings. He hangs out in the bookstore. So I do try to get him out once in a while, too.
Well, thank you and Joey for coming here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you to Kristen Evans for joining me today, to King Kaufman and Karen Creighton for producing this episode, and to you for listening. San Francisco City Insider is part of the San Francisco Chronicle podcast network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, please subscribe and give us a quick review wherever you get your podcasts. Support San Francisco City Insider and a lot of great journalism with a print or digital subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.